You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for March 6, 2015. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from Ben Carson's prison fanfic workshop. It's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, Ben Carson didn't workshop that gays in prison short story enough.
He apologized profusely for it. But
no, he apologized. He said, I profusely apologize if I have offended anyone.
Yeah. Well, he was a lot more. There was a lot more to it than that. But it showed. And, you know, I don't know if he's sincere and I don't really care. He's never going to get near the White House and he's going to be just another member of the clown car for the next year and a half. But it really is a window. These moments are little windows into how profoundly uninformed and isolated from normal people and pig ignorant. Even a brain surgeon in the conservative world can be about everything else. You know, just because you're really good at one thing, that does not carry over into other categories. In fact, there's the Dunning-Kruger mentality that you're so completely incompetent, you don't realize how incompetent you are, is sort of rampant among experts who really do believe that their expertise in one little narrow area should
means they're hyper-intelligent in every
about
area.
Everything. You know, they know lots of things about lots of things. Ben Carson, I would be delighted if I had a brain problem. I'd be delighted if he were my surgeon. That'd be great. But I don't want him anywhere near the levers of power of anything because he really is a profoundly screwed up head case when it comes to everything else about the world. So
except there's another head case, Brian Fisher, the Reverend.
Yeah.
Who said in response to this whole apology thing, if the left can beat him down as easily on an issue like homosexuality. On what other issues might he crumple if enough pressure is applied?
He's a rhino. He's a squish. Yeah. See, it's purity, man. It's you have to maintain your brand loyalty. I'm working on a longer, larger post that'll probably turn into an essay that I'll keep in a file someplace and never publish.
Oh no, you publish it because you
I'll publish it
on the podcast and now we're mad at you.
Okay. I did, and my tentative title is Liberal Incorporated.
Mm-hmm.
But beside the title is sort of beside the point. The idea is that the genius of Roger Ailes, the evil genius of Roger Ailes, was to realize, along with Newt Gingrich and Rush Limbaugh and the media side, the media and messaging side of conservatism, that the conservative mindset was uniquely suited to turn into a brand name consumer product that you could franchise. And it's perfect because you have people who are tremendously ignorant, deeply loyal to their product, and want predictability. They want to go into any conservative outlet and find the same fucking menu they find in every other conservative outlet. They want hate. They want a Keystone XL pipeline. They want you to hate some gays. They want you to be paranoid about guns and hate the black man in the White House. And liberals cause all your problems. And
well, I was going to say, one of the things that really disturbs me about politics today is that brand of conservative who thinks that politics is all about making liberals mad.
It is.
That if you blast Rush Limbaugh, if you see a Democratic bumper sticker on a car at the gas station, you should blast Rush Limbaugh at the gas station to make him mad because that's politics.
And that's really, I told you when I lived in Chicago, there was a station, there still is a station, WIND. Big blasting right wing, Mark Levin, Rush Limbaugh, all the, you know, the usual batshit suspects. But their motto, I have a picture of their billboard. Their motto was liberals hate us.
Yeah, that's it.
It wasn't we bring you policy. It had nothing to do with anything constructive. It was, you know those filthy, awful America hating scumbags that we all hate? Well, we make them mad. That's what we do. We jab them and stick them and punch them every day. And that's pretty much all they do. They dream up shit that they think will make the imaginary liberal that lives under their bed angry. And in some cases, what makes liberals angry will get them is like invading the wrong country.
Yep. Yep.
Or pissing away trillions of dollars on a war that they should never have fought. Or putting war criminals in charge of the country and letting them trash the place.
Or cutting the social services that actually help our base, that actually help people with, you know, healthcare policies and education policies that actually help our people, too. But you know what? We're going to cut those because that makes liberals mad.
And it's poison. It's absolute poison. Yeah. But they just slap the label on it. That brand name label, that Rush Limbaugh approved, don't worry, if you drink this, liberals will really hate it, label. Mm-hmm. And you know, it was Sinclair Lewis, I think, that when you know, said that when fascism comes to America, it'll be carrying a Bible, waving a flag. Yep. Fascism has come to America, and it's called the Republican Party. And the people at the top of it know absolutely what they're doing. They have taken what should have been a complex and relatively interesting intellectual movement called conservatism, which I happen to disagree with, but there you go, and compressed it and distilled it into a biscuit, into a brand name a product that you buy the same one everywhere. Because let's face it, the people in their base are old, stupid, angry, ignorant white people. And they want, when they sit down at their political dinner table, they want to have their meat and potatoes and beer. And that's what they want. And that's what Fox gives them every single day. And they want to hate liberals and hear about how liberals are ruining the country. And they want to talk to other people who agree with what they agree with. And that's the product. So if someone is batshit crazy, as Ben Carson, makes one slip up, you know, one thing that's not brand approved by the Home Office, you can guarantee that the antibodies will come swarming in to get rid of him because he's not pure enough.
Yep.
And the gist of my post, which is still cooking in my head, is basically, who elected Phil Griffin as the CEO of liberalism?
Yeah, I know.
By turning Fox News and hate radio into the Republican Party, you've made this a media war. And liberals are really bad at messaging, really bad at staying on message, really bad at focusing things. And by default, we have this station called MSNBC, because there used to be Air America, but that's gone now. The one little bastion left is being run like a crappy corporation with a conservative in the morning and, frankly, some con artists in the middle of the day and some people that I don't really want to listen to very much. There's not much liberal on the bone anymore over there. And that's a problem because it's a media war we're engaged in and we're really bad at fighting. I mean, you and I could do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
People we know could do it. We could put Matt Filipovich up there. He'd do a fantastic job.
Yep. He's very hardworking. Yeah. Yeah.
There are plenty of people out there who understand how to win this fight. Those people, unfortunately, don't happen to run MSNBC or any major radio stations. And the people who do run them aren't particularly interested in winning anything. They're interested in figuring out a formula to continue to make money off of an audience. And that, unfortunately, is where
we are. But they have no idea what leads to a passionate audience.
No,
and what don't. And, you know, this is the thing that I always thought about blogging. And actually, I even did some consulting work on this with people that were starting business blogs in Massachusetts to tell them, you don't need everybody reading your blog. No. If the governor of your state reads your blog and he's the only one, but he reads it every day, you've got the audience you want, because if the governor reads it, everybody else is going to read it too.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, if it's a policy blog, this was a state policy blog in Massachusetts, you know, you don't care. If the budget director of the state reads your blog, you're in good shape. Don't try to get a big audience.
Right. Now,
so it's the same. I mean, now I understand that TV has totally different rules, but if you start to build up a really passionate audience, I think you can make it in broadcasting if you have a really passionate audience. The TV world is so bifurcated at this point, and people watch things on demand and they watch things on Netflix. And what you really need in this world of cable news is a passionate group of people. Mm-hmm. And we saw that with Chris Hayes.
We did. Absolutely.
That was appointment television. You set your alarm on a Saturday to watch TV.
A Saturday and a Sunday.
And you got on Twitter and it was a club. And it worked.
It clicked really and it worked and it was fun and it was engaging. The flip side of that, I don't disagree at all, but the flip side of that is the Illinois Policy Institute.
I'm sorry, I laugh every time you say that, but it is funny.
Or the Heartland Institute, who has these are small, passionate groups of people who reach a small, influential audience.
Mm-hmm.
One of whom is our new governor.
Our new governor. Yeah.
And what they are interested in is getting rid of government. getting rid of unions, getting rid of minimum wage, getting rid of Social Security, getting rid of pensions, getting rid of everything, having anything.
I even read an article today, Driftglass, about the remote possibility of right to work in Illinois.
Oh, yeah.
And I just thought, oh, you're kidding. Come on. But it's something that our Republican governor would like to have.
Yes. And he has reached immediately for. I know that his next year's budget is just wipes everything out. But this year's budget, he has now grabbed for emergency powers.
Oh, he's a fascist. Yeah. He has said, look, emergency powers.
We have to start
and
now.
I want to cut everything by fiat. I'm going to start cutting budgets in state agencies just because.
Well, and not in next year's budget, which you would debate in the legislature.
No, this year's budget that's already budgeted for.
Exactly.
Right.
Let's cut things right now and important things. You know, things for elderly and children and the disabled.
Just
wipe them out. Because he's the governor, he has those kind of powers. But who did he put in strategic positions? People from the Illinois Policy Institute. Now, the Illinois Policy Institute is basically, in your parlance and in mine, a big blog.
Yeah.
It's a big policy shop. But what it has behind it is enormously wealthy contributors who are willing to pay for the infrastructure necessary to build that institution up. And one of the biggest contributors to the Illinois Policy Institute was Bruce Rauner, the governor of Illinois. So it is a vicious circle. It is a vicious downward spiraling circle. So, yes, you can indeed make policy changes, move the world slightly in your direction with a passionate voice. But when the people mounting against you have a passionate voice and $1 billion, you're going to lose every single time.
Because when money is speech, remember what we always say, when money is speech, money becomes the only speech.
Exactly.
And what we wind up doing, you said this to me the other day, and I've been thinking about it ever since. What winds up happening is we wind up as liberals spending all of our time defending Al Sharpton.
Yep. Yep.
And that's not Pierce. How I want to spend my time.
Charlie Pierce
wrote
a wonderful column. No, Charlie Pierce wrote a wonderful column about MSNBC's Al Sharpton problem.
Yeah.
And I don't want to have to chase that guy down that rabbit hole every time he opens his mouth and embarrasses.
No. And it's not my job as a little white woman in Southern Illinois to tell African Americans who their spokesperson should or should not be. That's not what I'm about.
But you know what? Phil Griffin has.
Yeah.
He's decided that Al Sharpton is the guy who should be the black guy on MSNBC, as opposed to 30 other people who'd be more qualified for that job.
Mm-hmm.
Because he could bring, rumor has it, Al Sharpton had the clout to screw up the deal.
Yeah, I heard about
it. And so it's like, this is old school organizing, man. It's, my friends call the strike, and I come in as the person who can resolve the strike. You know, we create the crisis, then we resolve the crisis, and then it redounds to my benefit. It's all one big package. So it is, and it's also not my job to defend Hillary Clinton. At the other end of the spectrum, I don't want to spend my time defending
Well,
Hillary
we're
going
to get in. Are you ready to dovetail into email?
Because
whatever.
I don't want to date my ex, I really don't. And I spent 10 years or 8 years defending the Clintons off and on.
Yeah.
And here we go again.
Well, talk to me about this and how you feel about it, because I know that when it first broke, you kind of rolled your eyes and said, really, this is such a Clinton scandal.
It is. It is one of those things where I wish I could just walk away from the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because on the one hand, this is truly a case of both sides are equally right. On the one hand, this is such a Clinton crisis. This is such a Clinton problem. It's one of those things where we are secretive. We have one set of rules for everyone else, one set of rules for us, but we are the good guys, so it's okay, right? It's perfectly okay for us to do these things. I don't think there's anything nefarious or criminal going on here. I think they're just naturally secretive people. And if I were them and had been through...
Oh, I'd be way more secretive.
I wouldn't be in politics.
Everything would be in dissolving paper.
Are you kidding me? Fuck these people.
You have to eat this after we're done, because I will not have a House committee looking at anything I do forever. Yeah, I'm not going to leave them anything.
This is not a stained blue dress yet, and it isn't going to be. But this is cattle futures.
This is
one more thing that, look, you have been living in the spotlight for all this time. You know that your enemies are spending their days and nights ranging you like artillery. You know, they know every one of your weaknesses. They know every one of your scandals. They have pre-programmed those attack coordinates. That's what freaked out the Republican Party in 2008 when Hillary didn't run. They had all this shit they were going to run against her, and then they had put her on the shelf because there's this guy named Barack Obama. They have nothing on him, so they had to invent an entire strategy. But they have the Hillary, they have the Clintons figured out. They know where to drop the artillery. It's not going to work. People who hate Hillary Clinton and the Clintons hate them are going to hate them in a year. People who are liberals and Democrats who will hold their nose and vote for them or vote for them proudly, whichever, are not going to be persuaded or changed in any way. So the battle lines are pretty well fixed. But Jesus, you people, you fucking people, you know they're gunning for you. You know they have their grinding stones that are
holding their axes. And they're going to turn this into what is she hiding about Benghazi?
About Benghazi. You know
this is going to happen. You know that's where they're going. Yeah.
You goddamn well know this is coming. And you do it anyway. Because you're a Clinton. And the rules, those kind of rules don't apply to you. It's not a criminal matter. It's not a matter of, you know, it's consensual. You shouldn't be persecuted for this, but you know you will be.
And Driftglass, the thing that just gets me in the heart is mm-hmm. that if everything goes well, if everything goes really well, we've mm-hmm. got 10 years of this.
I know. 10 years.
10 years. It's crazy. And someone pointed out on Medium today that, you know, that really the State Department's email system is a sieve.
Yeah.
So if you really want security, Clinton actually did the right thing. But what she was probably doing is just trying to do her job. Right. You have something that worked on her phone, that worked at her house, that worked wherever she was. And it wasn't
enough.
A question. Yeah. That the WikiLeaks got the State Department's classified communications. They didn't get the Clinton basement emails.
Yeah.
So,
sorry. Well,
I get that. But
I don't know what their email server was, but I do know that having worked for very, very, very rich people before, mm-hmm. for even for a brief period of time, there is a private email network, a private house server, a private security system, even though the bank that I run has its own server, because I don't trust that shit.
Yep.
You know, it's ultra secret, super private, and ultra secret, super protected, because it's me.
Yep.
And I can afford the very best fences around my secure data, because everybody's gunning for me. So, and I'm not saying that's what happened. But on the one hand, there really was a vast right-wing conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
There really was a conspiracy to destroy the Clintons for 8 years. Yep. And I have written about this to death. I mean, I've every single scandal, I pointed out the fact that the same people who freaked out about deficits when Clinton inherited them from Bush and Reagan never gave a shit about deficits when they were running them up again under Bush too. The same people who said presidents should be held to the highest possible standards under Clinton are the same people who never held Bush to anything, even though he was a war criminal and a traitor, as far as I'm concerned. Certainly criminally incompetent. His vice president, however, should be in jail. Yep. Absolutely should be in jail. So the Republicans have no principles or standards when it comes to these things. They have talking points. When there's a Democrat in the White House, there's one set of fucking rules. And you can go through and look at the record of what people said about Clinton, including Joe Scarborough, Congressman Joe Scarborough.
Oh, yeah.
When Clinton was president.
Big time.
Was talking about how, you know, if the president falls on his ass, you can attack the commander in chief when we're at war. There's no conflict between those two. And you had people like Tom DeLay, Lindsey Graham. You had all kinds of prominent Republicans at the time explaining why it was perfectly okay to impeach, attack, destroy, witch hunt.
Oh, it was your obligation. It was your obligation for the sake of the troops. You were supposed to do this.
Yeah. You were insulting the troops. The troops are off defending the Constitution, goddammit. And our job is to do our constitutional duty, which is to take down this monster. So the right invented this fictional Bill Clinton, who was the worst human being who ever walked the earth and spent 8 years trying to destroy the fiction they'd created, because they had to have an enemy. They cannot function without the enemy. They used to have a Cold War. Now they have terrorists and they have the black guy in the White House. But in that period in between, they had nobody. So they made Bill Clinton into the worst monster in human history. And they went after him over and over and over again. So the right has no conscience and no memory, which is what makes them strong. They can rip the hell out of Bill Clinton on principle. This is me having air quotes. And then completely jettison every single fucking principle the day George Bush goes into office and adopt an entirely new 180-degree in opposition set of principles for the entire Bush presidency, and then jettison those and go back to the Clinton rules the minute Barack Obama's president. So, but here's the thing. As a Clinton, you know the nature of your enemy. You know they're coming after. Yes, there is a vast right-wing conspiracy. They do, in fact, run the Republican Party. There used to be a mixture. even in the Clinton days, you know, you could get something done with Newt Gingrich. But the crazies have completely taken over. They've like petrified wood. They've taken over every cell in the organism and converted it into monstrous, crazy, paranoid loonies. So you know that. And you're going to run for president. You know this going in. So apparently it's a Clinton trait that I'm going to hand my enemy a sword with which they can stab me. And then I'm going to bitch about it and send my minions out to complain how unfair it is.
Yep.
Like, really? I did this for 8 years. You know, it is like dating your ex. No. I did this already. I got rid of this. This was in the past. This is why we elected Barack Obama, so we would not have to go through this shit again with the goddamn Clintons. Yeah. And here we are once again with Hillary poised to be coronated as the candidate, as the nominee from my party.
Right. And she's going to shoot herself in the foot over email?
Over something that was so fucking preventable. That only a Clinton would think that, hey, you know what? There's a rake over there. Let me run over there and step on it. So
there's still plenty of time for her to learn her lesson and not do a Celine Dion campaign song and not do Shame on You, Barack Obama, and not do the French fry ad with Bill and on and on and on.
Well, let me just add two more things. First, I want her to run against somebody.
Yeah, it'll make her a better candidate.
I want her to have a really tough sparring partner who, if that person is better than her, then that should be the candidate.
Yeah.
But I want her to be run around the track like Ali preparing for Zaire.
Mm-hmm.
I want her to work out and work out and work out and take body shot after body shot and get ready for the fight that's coming because it's coming.
And don't push her to the left, too. Coming. She's got to be pushed to the left. Yeah.
And she's got to be tough enough.
Populist.
So that when this shit comes up, you don't send your minions out. You step right into the microphone and say, fuck you.
Yeah.
You know, you do the Paul Wellstone and you look over your glasses and you say, what the hell's your problem?
Yep.
And
well, I'm waiting for that moment. And it's got to come from Hillary if she's going to really succeed of the at long last, you know, have you no sense of decency? Mm-hmm. And that moment where the mesmerism breaks and, you know, we lose John Boehner. Oh, my God. You know.
Yeah. When she slaps the czar.
Yeah, it's got to happen. That's how it's got to happen.
Because if it's this completely pre-programmed, inevitable, fixed position battle, trench warfare, then the minute your defenses crack, the minute something goes wrong, you fall apart. And that's what I don't want. Because I have no great love for the Clintons. I have no great love for Hillary Clinton. I'm glad she is a successful person. And I'm not going to diss her. I'm not going to trash her on this podcast. But I really want the next two Supreme Court justices to be appointed by a Democrat.
Yep.
Because we've seen what the Supreme Court will do when it's hanging by one centrist thread.
Yep.
And so I have no illusions about politics in this country. I have no illusions about how deep the shit we're in how deep it is. But there's putting a Republican in the White House is tossing a drowning man an anvil.
It is. And it's setting fire to the country.
And
forever.
Putting Hillary in the White House would be better than that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm willing
to change gears, Thrift Glass, if you don't
please.
Mind.
Please, absolutely.
We're running on.
Yeah.
I'm so sick of Chris Christie telling us that he worked out this morning. I don't give a shit. Shut up.
Yeah.
Apparently, his office, people believe, took over the Exxon settlement and reduced it by a lot, by billions.
Yeah, by billions. Uh-huh.
And there's this reporter, Robin Farzad, of Full Disclosure, who said the good news for Chris Christie is after New Jersey, he can make tons as an oil lobbyist. Yeah. You know, and that is said without irony. That's just true.
Yeah. Oh, he will. He can walk right across the street.
It just makes me sick. This country makes me sick sometimes.
It's the Chris Christie diet. How I lost billions of dollars in 1 week. No, you didn't lose it. You just sold out.
You gave it away. You gave it away to your friends.
Yeah. You came through the door sold out. You're pre-sold. So, you know, not that that's going to make any. I have no sense of what the Republican Party is doing. I know what they're doing as an amoeba, an entity, a blob. I know the direction they are slouching because they've been slouching that direction for 30 years, 40 years. But I have no idea who they're going to nominate and who they're not going to nominate. I have no idea what the primary process is going to look like. I know enough to know that it's going to be phenomenally entertaining. And at this point, that's all I can ask for my political process on the right is that don't disappoint me, guys. You're a clown car full of drunk, paranoid lunatics or people who have to appeal two drunk, paranoid lunatics. So go all out, embrace your inner nut job, and give it to me. Because that's
speaking
that's
of paranoid good. Lunatics.
Yeah.
The Ferguson Police Department's emails reminded me of every email that Uncle Liberty has ever forwarded on any day, any given day. This is nothing new. This is what they do. Yeah. And these racist emails that were published by the Southern Poverty Law Center and were in the report of the Department of Justice. Kudos to the Department of Justice for releasing this report and saying, you know, not only is the Ferguson Police Department racist, but this is just the tip of the iceberg in terms of nationwide problems that we have with this country.
Oh, no, this is the this is the subterranean everyday water cooler conversation between people who think they're safe talking to each other.
And this is nothing I read in those emails even raised an eyebrow. I've heard it all before. So, you know,
I've heard it all before too, over and over again for years from people who, and this is where I sort of derive organically my sense that debating these people is pointless.
Yeah.
Because the person who believed in 2004, who was circulating emails in 2004 that says Barack Obama will never serve out
his first term.
His first term, because no black man will go to work for four straight years. Will work, a steady job for 4 years. Yeah. Is a bigot and an asshole and a jagoff.
Yeah.
And deserves to be dragged out in public and laughed at and humiliated and called out for his bullshit. But multiply that person by 30 million, and you have the Republican Party.
And give them a police badge most of the time in a black community. It just is awful.
And this is not happening in a vacuum. No. I bring it back to national politics, but it's really important that people remember that these people are saying this shit in the 21st century. Mm-hmm. They lived through the entire Bush administration, and then they're still conservative. They lived through the Clinton witch hunt years. They're still a conservative. They watched the conservatives set fire to the world economy. They're still a conservative. They watched the Republican Party embrace torture and war criminalism and lying us into the wrong war and enriching war criminals like Dick Cheney and killing thousands of Americans. And they're still conservatives.
But they watched that's the House because they are offered the one drug that they can't resist, which is white supremacy.
Yeah.
I'm white and I'm better than them. So,
and that's why it's a brand.
And that is heroin to someone who feels impoverished and weak and insecure and like all of their economic ability has been taken away from them.
It has.
No, I'm white. And it's true. It has. Uh-huh. But it's OK because I'm white and I'm better than everybody else.
And the alternative is admitting you were wrong and you've been wrong your whole life. Yeah. And they can't do it. They're not emotionally mature enough or psychologically capable of admitting that level of fuck upness. So they go deeper and deeper into the lie. And the people who run the party know that. They know they've got these people. They're hooked. They can never, ever give it up. So that's why after 7 years, 6.5 years of steady, competent, occasionally disappointing, occasionally frustrating, an honorable, kind. It's fucking, Robin Laura Petrie in the White House.
Yeah.
These are great parents. They're clearly in love with each other. They're madly happy to be married.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're honorable. They're cheerful. They love their country. They exemplify everything we want people to be in this country.
Not a scandal. Not a personal scandal.
They raise their kids. They bring their mother-in-law in.
Smoking cigarettes is the worst thing you can say about him.
And
after
pressing the conservatives' face against the reality that Barack Obama is a decent and honorable man who occasionally does things that horrify me as president. I'm not going to pretend that he doesn't.
Yeah.
But after pressing their face against, you supported the dry, drunk half-wit for 8 years and cheered him on as he wrecked the country and ran up in debt. Now watch this guy calmly and methodically try to fix your fuck-ups for six straight years and retain his sense of humor, retain his honor, retain his love for his wife, his love for his family, his love for his country. What's your reaction? You hate him even more. You can't stand
it. He doesn't love America like we do.
It drives
you
insane.
Yeah.
And so if that's at this point, you shrug your shoulders and go, you people are not salvageable as citizens. You might be great neighbors, but you are unsalvageable as citizens. And there's nothing we can do but wait for you to die because you're never going to change. So we wait for these old white cranks to shuffle off this mortal coil, except you look at the Ferguson Police Department, they passed along their hemophilia to the next generation.
And Idris Less.
Yeah, blue gal.
I don't want to get into the Bibi Netanyahu speech because I just think the whole thing was an embarrassment to the whole country.
Which country?
I did our country.
Oh.
Not the 51st state of Israel.
But it gave us a chance to see Joe Lieberman one last time.
I wanted to share something from Mock Paper Scissors. We're going to shout out to him again, to Ten Grain again. Because this is hilarious. Jennifer Rubin tweeted that Rand Paul didn't clap for Bibi enough. Yeah. What's the matter? Don't you love Israel? And Rand Paul's staff replied, Yahai stood up 50 times. Mm-hmm. Apparently he counted the number of times he gave Bibi a standing ovation.
Yeah, but there was that one 12-second Vine clip of him rolling his eyes and clapping his hands in a half-hearted way. That killed it for J-Rube. Jennifer Rubin is quite a treasure.
Okay, he called her Jen Ghazi. I like that.
Oh, good for you.
Jen Ghazi rips Aqua Buddha a new hole. He kept a tally of his sincerely held reaction. Mm-hmm. 50 standing ovations. And
Christ.
He calls Rand Paul. I think he's done this for a long time. Schrodinger's candidate. That's very good.
Oh, that is good.
Rand won't be getting the much coveted genocide endorsement.
Oh, yeah. I just want to hug your face and lay my eggs in your throat. No, no, that's bad. See, don't let her near you, man. That's what's going to happen. And
Apex ambassador to the WAPO, Jennifer Rubin, is not
here with us. This is Fred Hyatt. And let us not forget that Jen Rubin is a product of Fred Hyatt.
Yeah.
Fred Hyatt at the International House of Neocons over at the WAPO is the reason Jennifer Rubin. There are people at the top of these organizations who actively choose to employ people like Jennifer Rubin and people like David Brooks.
Let's face it, Bibi Netanyahu is a neocon.
Oh, yeah.
You had something from Charles Pierce about that just blew my mind.
It was a wonderful.
This blew my mind.
And Charlie Pierce, to his credit, I don't have the quote in front of me, so I do apologize, but he said, I am getting all of this from a book, an indispensable book, the subject of which I will tell you about in a minute, because it'll ruin the story. But he said, you know, the president of the United States is negotiating with Iran, you know, the nutty, flighty, very reactionary government of Iran. He is insisting that his office, the office of the president, should be the sole spokesperson for foreign policy. The office of legal counsel says absolutely right. This is absolutely the case. Congress should not be sticking its nose in the middle of our business. Congress keeps insisting on pulling back the covers and seeing what the president's doing and interfering with it. And the president is getting hacked off and pissed off and mighty inconvenienced by the fact that Congress has no goddamn business putting their nose where it doesn't belong. And the president we're talking about is Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
And it was the Iran-Contra scandal.
And he was selling weapons to Iran that came from, where were they manufactured?
Israel. And he pointed out that this genius tactic of dealing with terrorists in this way, Reagan got from reading a book by an ambitious young Israeli politician by the name of Benjamin Netanyahu.
Holy
and man. He said, this was Reagan. This was the Republican icon. The Saint Ronald Reagan was the one who said, get your fucking nose out of my business. I'm negotiating with Iran. It's none of your goddamn business. This is entirely up to the president. When he was selling weapons to terrorists.
Yep.
Now that the black Democrat guy is saying, no, we're trying to keep weapons out of their hands. The same Republican Party is shitting themselves, bringing in a foreign leader, sticking in the middle of the conversation to intentionally fuck up the negotiations, to both promote Bibi Netanyahu at home, because that's what neocons do, to promote him in his own personal election, to promote his ambitions, and to screw up the foreign policy of the United States while the president of the United States is trying to do something that is really tricky and really difficult and might not work. This is very tired, because this is now officially the 1,000,000th time that I have said, you know, if a Democrat were doing that to a Republican president, blah, blah, blah. But that's just the way things are. I'm trying to teach myself to get over that, because that's just the way things are. Of course, if it were reversed, they would impeach him. If things were reversed.
Tomorrow.
If it were a Republican president and a Democratic Congress hijacked his foreign policy by bringing a foreign leader in to rebut him And they can they point to a foreign leader and say, we side with a foreign government over our elected president on the floor of the U.S. Congress. That would have been the end. They would have burned the city down. But because Republicans doing it, they're like, well, you know, that's how they are. It is useless to get angry at John Boehner for being a tool mm-hmm. of his party. John Boehner is nothing at this point but a weepy orange codpiece. Half drunk all the time, or all drunk half the time.
He should be drunk all the time. If I were him, I would be.
Yeah. It was staggering. I mean, if one of the immensely incompetent fuck ups that Boehner has committed during his tenure as Speaker would be disqualifying for any Democrat, but he's had a string of he's had nothing but screw ups, nothing but failures, nothing but his own party just shoving his face in their ass and say, go ahead, kiss it, you son of a bitch. Yeah. That's been in public. He fails in public every goddamn day, and he keeps his job, which is kind of impressive. But it's time to get over being mad at John Boehner for being John Boehner, Republicans for being Republicans. It's time to get mad at people who keep empowering them, who keep putting them in office, who keep saying that, you know what, it's really both sides. It's really a two-part problem. It's really the partisanship in Washington, the gridlock in Washington, rather than, no, it's the Republican Party. Those are the people you should be really pissed about. Those are the people who should be have cameras in their faces. Mm-hmm. Not they shouldn't be behind cameras. They should be in front of them. And that's where I stand. I really have sort of moved away from the look with alarm at what Rush Limbaugh did today. Yeah, he's an asshole. He's a racist asshole. He appeals to racist assholes. What else is new? He's been doing it for a quarter of a century. Much more interested in what Chuck Todd does.
Yep.
And what's going on at MSNBC and how Phil Griffin is screwing liberalism on television back into the back 50 years. So anyway,
I really want to know what Bibi Netanyahu owns in terms of stock in Israeli defense firms too. I'm just going to throw that out there.
That's a thing with you. You're very consistent.
Following the goddamn money. Yes. That's every single time. That's what you got to do. And, mm-hmm. and speaking of that, we got two envelopes in the mail today, or two mailings in the mail today. One was a big oversized, thick 4-page letter from Barack Obama asking us to give money to the Democratic National Committee.
You spell my name right?
No, it was addressed to me, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and they didn't say Frank. No, I said, that's what I should say. If you give Drift Glass a job, we'll give you a $35 contribution.
It was Dear Drift, yeah.
No, it wasn't Dear Drift, and it wasn't Dear Frank. I think that's the Equal Rights Campaign that does that. But anyway, no, it was a thick envelope. The other one was a very modest postcard from our local county branch of Habitat for Humanity.
Love those guys.
Love those guys.
Love those
guys. And building houses right here in our hometown for people who need them. And I hate to turn down Barry O, but then I thought, I thought, what would a community organizer do? And
he organizes his community.
I do agree with one of our correspondents wrote us a few weeks ago and said, you know, I'm done giving to the Democratic Party until they show that they are serious about campaign finance reform, because if they're not, then they're just part of the problem. And I do agree with that.
I gotta admit, I play a game with myself now. There, it's the DCCC and the bold progressives and Move On and whatever Adam Green Urgin is doing today. Whatever the headline is today,
I
know that by tomorrow morning or by 12:01, I will have an email from Adam Green or Jim Dean or someone else from one of these organizations that's algorithmically written. Can you believe Bibi Netanyahu gave the speech to Congress? Blah, blah, blah. Look for the dollar sign. Blah, blah, blah. Send $3. It is like fucking clockwork. It doesn't matter what the headline is. It doesn't matter what the issue is. It's usually Elizabeth Warren on a slow news day. Help us make Elizabeth Warren run for president.
Which is so sexist. I hate that.
It's so short-sighted, too. I mean, to me, Elizabeth Warren, it's like she's, in a sense, on the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
She's in a position where she's unassailable. She can have that job forever. She's not going to be in for 4 years or eight. She's not going to run, fail, and then not be present. She can be a U.S. senator from Massachusetts for as long as she wants. Mm-hmm. And I want her to be there until she's Ted Kennedy, until she is the lion of the Senate.
Yep.
And have a position of unassailable virtue and a voice as big as this country. And to suggest that, no, we want her to run for president, it's It's silly. She doesn't want to do it. She's said a million different ways she's not going to do it. Please stop begging me for money to make her do it. I respect her immensely. I respect her decision not to do that. Now, if email gate, if at sign gate or whatever the hell we're going to call it, blows up and Hillary Clinton says, you know what? Screw it. I'm not running. And Elizabeth Warren is one of the people who is brought into the race because a vacuum is created because her party needs her and her country needs her. She will have my full and unreserved support. But as long as Elizabeth Warren, who I respect immensely, as I believe I mentioned 10 seconds ago, says, I do not want to run for president, I am going to respect that. And please stop sending me emails every time Benjamin Netanyahu did not.
It's date rape, Driftglass. I mean, I hate to go, you know, that's almost mentioning Hitler when you do that.
No, but she said no. She said no.
She said no.
But you know, if we
ply her a little bit, she'll say yes. Yeah. You know what? Stop it.
You know, chicks don't know what they need.
See?
Yeah.
See?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
All right. We're going to end on a kind of a longer note than I wanted to, except that this is such a good article.
It is.
I read it to you at dinner. And
yeah, it rocked.
It rocked. This was in today's paper, not in the editorial page. This was on the business page of our local Associated Press outlet. Let me put it that way. They don't have a lot of original reporting in here like most local, small local newspapers. But I have mentioned Malcolm Burko on the podcast before.
Yes, you have.
And he is generally writing to senior citizens about how to invest their money or how to roll over their IRA. He is his column is called Taking Stock.
Yeah.
And it's about the stock market, and he writes about the stock market and investments, and that's what he does.
Mm-hmm.
But every once in a while, he says something that just kind of makes you go,
As they say, a wild hair up his ass. So.
Yeah, a real wild hair up his ass, and this was a good one. Someone wrote to him and asked him about whether Bank of America was a good stock or not, and would like his opinion. And she signed it, MC Oklahoma City. Dear MC, don't buy it. I have never, ever recommended Bank of America stock. That's because I don't trust its legal representation, its business model, its accounting, or its management. And I certainly don't trust the 15 people with sinecures on Bank of America's vaporous board of directors, each of whom receives a $25,000 monthly check from Bank of America, lavish per diem pay, and a generous bounty from numerous other corporate boards. I did recommend Bank of America's preferred stock, the convertible stock, on several occasions in 2009 and 2010. I recommended this convertible preferred because I believed that Bank of America was too big to fail, I thought management was too connected to go to prison, and the current yield on that stock was in excess of 10%. I reckon readers would enjoy a 10% yield while waiting for a potential capital gains opportunity. I'd never recommend a bank that's run by a crew of crooks who knowingly bilked middle-class Americans out of billions of dollars.
Wow. Yeah.
This mortgage fraud by Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan Chase, Citigroup, UBS, etc. is the primary reason the stock market crashed in 2008.
Thank you.
This is an investment. This would never appear on the editorial page of our paper, ever.
It wasn't poor people and
no,
family.
No.
It
was, no, and by the way, that. Right uh-huh. next to George Will and who's the blonde woman who I never want to talk about again? Ann Coulter.
Asking me about the knitting bag.
Ann Coulter. Ann Coulter and George Will are syndicated in our paper. On the opinion page. This article would never appear on the opinion page. Okay. Primary reason the market crashed in 2008, and in the aftermath, not a single member of Bank of America's management, which engineered this fraud, its executive committee, which encouraged it, or its board of directors, which approved it, paid a fine or spent an hour in jail. It's good to have well-paid friends in Congress. Okay, he could have ended this article there, and it would have been wow, right?
He went drift class, didn't he?
He went drift class. He goes further than that, though.
But no.
But
now
no.
How much you have to pay? But no, there's more.
But wait, there's more.
I must stress, this is in the financial section.
This is on the financial section. This is a syndicated financial column. Yeah.
A very staid, you know, don't fall for reverse mortgage kind of column. You know, this is not a radical bomb thrower at all.
No, no.
But today
he got that hair up his ass. Yes.
Yeah, okay. He did.
I like that. All right. The ongoing problem with public companies is that mutual funds, pension plans, and institutions expect management to grow revenues, earnings, and dividends every year because those metrics increase the prices of stocks. If a company fails to do so, its overcompensated CEO will be out of his or her job. And in our crazy capitalistic economy, Bank of America's banksters are expected to provide shareholders with annual gains, regardless of the intense competition from their competitors. That's tough to do, especially when your competition is equally degenerate and the economy can't generate enough activity to improve revenues, earnings, yep, and dividends.
Uh-huh.
So last decade, banks had two alternatives. They could mulct, M-U-L-C-T, that's a great word,
yeah,
mulct,
yeah,
diddle and exploit their clients, or they could employ cunning legal counsel to advise management on how to fudge numbers, skirt rules, and misrepresent services.
Uh-huh.
These schemes created cumulative losses of hundreds of billions of dollars, and millions of middle-class Americans were jolted into penury. Many lawyers have become legal terrorists in American society.
Oh, bless your heart, man.
Yep. Not a single soul employed by these banks spent a nickel on legal fees. However, Bernie Madoff and his covey of cohorts who stole tens of billions from wealthy Americans, uh-huh, now reside in some of our best federal hotels.
Oh.
The lesson is steal from the wealthy and pay the price if you get caught. But it's okay to step on middle class Americans because they can't afford representation.
That was lovely. I feel
he
like
he calls into question
cigarette.
The very nature of capitalism itself.
He does. He does.
In the investment page of our local Republican rag. Yep.
He used the C word.
He did say.
And he called them degenerates.
I just love that. Okay. That is, by the way, Malcolm Berko, B-E-R-K-O, if you want to go look it up. I'll put that also on our Facebook page. I'm sure it's linked somewhere. Yeah. Last week's show, we mixed up Samuel L. Jackson and Morgan Freeman.
Racist.
We also mixed up Roger Moore and Michael Moore. I meant to say Michael Moore.
Yeah. Racist.
So
yeah.
to quote Monty Python, our fact checker has been sacked.
Sorry, Jimmy.
Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is Christopher. Christopher's humans are away at college, so mom and dad have custody of Christopher, and he seems satisfied with that.
Custody is a very sketchy thing to use in when it comes to cats, I'm just saying.
Well, you know, Christopher has custody of them. Let's put
it that
way. I will
permit you to feed me, you insufferable monkeys. Yeah.
You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions! Letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, and you can too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. I want to thank everyone who has sent in-kind contributions.
Yeah.
We've gotten books on tape, T-shirts, yarn, cookies. You know, you guys are just awesome. It's so fun to go to the P.O. box and have $5 in there or a dollar. Someone sent us a dollar. I want to say this. $1 this week and said, I'm on limited income, but I really feel it's important to show you a vote of confidence. Isn't that nice? I thought that was really nice.
It's incredibly sweet.
$1 vote of confidence.
Those are the kind of dollar bills that you frame and put up on the wall.
Yeah, Noel, we didn't do that.
No, we spent it, man.
We're going to spend it.
Yeah.
But it meant a lot to us to hear that. You know, just we know that you are under no obligation. If you can't afford to buy yourself, you know, an espresso-based beverage, we don't expect you to donate. This is our gift to you.
And but, times are still really tough. I mean, times are still...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, really, I mean...
There's still a recession slash depression out there for a big chunk of this country.
Well,
and we're not pretending otherwise.
You have two jobs, and neither one of them are full-time and at the moment.
Like I say, I have two paper routes.
Yeah, yeah. So it's we know it's tough, and we've been there. We're better off than we've been for a long time. Mm-hmm. It gets better. It's getting better. It will get better. But we just want you to know how much we appreciate your support. Thank you so much. And please rate our show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. And thank you. Hey, Drift Class, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties joined with Jeb Bush in asking our donors to limit their contributions to the Professional Left Podcast to $1 million.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under Creative Commons license. Copyright 2015, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
Science Fiction University... We have a huge one tonight. This is Lightning Round, and this is courtesy of Magnolia E-Publishing. We haven't had one from him in a long time, so thank you. Magnolia E-Publishing sent us about 9 minutes of audio. I'm going to play little bits of it for you, and there are 21 of them, so you're going to have to listen and just Lightning Round, give them to me quick.
So this is going to go on all night, so just get strapped,
just
folks.
Strap yourself in, people. All right. Here we go. Number one.
Oh, goody. My Illudium Q36 explosive space modulator.
Marvin the Martian.
That is Marvin the Martian. Yes, absolutely. Yes. With the Bugs Bunny cartoons. Okay, number two.
Everyone of my age knows this. Johnny Quest.
Johnny Quest. Oh, you're good. Mm-hmm. All right, number three.
Stop this crazy thing!
The Flintstones' dark cousin, the Jetsons.
The Jetsons, yes.
Yeah.
All right, number four.
Bye! You have to put a force field around the plane!
But you said we weren't supposed to use our power!
I know what I said! Listen to what I'm saying now!
Oh, I love this movie. This is The Incredibles. Mm-hmm. The Incredibles movie. Rent it and watch it. It's amazing. It's a wonderful thing.
Really good plot, yes. Mm-hmm. The Incredibles, number five.
Damage has taken place to the normally dominant left hemisphere, and the right hemisphere is attempting to compensate.
Two hemispheres of my brain are competing?
Yes.
I could be murdered.
Not fair. Philip K. Dick novel. Rotoscoped into a movie, and a very good movie, actually. A Scanner Darkly, with an amazing cast, actually. Keanu Reeves in it. Woody Harrelson's in it. Iron Man, Robert Downey Jr. is in it.
He's the one that's saying murdered.
I'm one of six people who actually saw the thing, and I own a copy. But it's a Philip Dick novel, a pretty faithful recreation of it, too. So go check it out.
Number six.
Without a planet, we're no longer a threat.
It's me, it's Kale.
Humans.
I happen to be humanity's last great hope.
I weep for the species.
I don't know. I should know. I don't know.
That one is Titan A.E.
Oh, movie. I've heard it. Yeah, you know, I've always meant to see that. I never have. So I'll probably have to check that out.
Add that to your list. Yeah. All right. Number seven.
I take it you have no love of the Empire.
I don't.
Well, neither do I. It will be easy to find the ship you seek. Follow me, friend.
Don't you think it might be imprudent to trust him so quickly, sir?
He's our only chance. And besides, he seems like a friend.
Well, okay, that's Star Wars.
Yeah.
Obviously, but it's not from any movie I'm aware of. So maybe the series? TV series?
It's animated cartoon from the Star Wars holiday special. Who knew?
Oh, God. Oh, that's the one with Bea Arthur.
Yeah.
And Life Day. Oh, Jesus. No wonder I forgot that.
Apparently there's a cartoon segment of that show.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks for recovering that memory.
Yeah. Okay. Number eight.
Oh, you almost had it.
I'm never going to defeat Zurg.
Sure you will, Rex.
Oh, love this movie, too. That's Toy Story, one of the Toy Stories.
Toy Story 2. Yes, yes. Yeah. All right. Number 9.
There's a moral to all this. When two people really care about each other, they have all the magic they need.
What happened to the lights?
I don't know.
Fred, where'd those flowers come from?
A surprise, Wilma. A complete surprise. I think there's going to be a lot of surprises from now on. A few more of these good deeds, and maybe they'll let me go back.
Oh, come on. Come on. Originally entitled The Flagstones, I believe.
Oh, really?
It's The Flintstones with the Great Gazoo.
Which
was replicated on The Simpsons at about the same point when they ran out of ideas. They said, yeah, we're going to go with Gizmodiar or Osmodiar or whatever it is. And it was a direct hat tip to the other blue-collar cartoon of our generation, The Flintstones.
All right. Number 10.
Jesus. I have no idea. I should know this, but I don't know this.
It's actually Star Trek, the animated series.
Oh, you know what?
I never watched. It just went right over.
Don't tell anyone. Don't tell anyone. I never watched it.
Yeah,
never watched it. I mean, I probably picked up an episode here or there, but they turned Star Trek into a cartoon, and that was before I got hip to the awesomeness that is cartoons. So.
I think that's it. And also, I was not hip to Star Trek until later.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I was too young. I mean, I think I was 10 years old when this cartoon came out.
Yeah, I was I was doing other things at the time, I believe. Up in my room, so, yeah.
Yeah, you were 12. You would be. All right. Number 11.
It's bad to kill. Guns kill. And you don't have to be a gun.
Oh, this is a great movie. This is The Iron Giant.
Iron Giant.
This is a wonderful, sweet, smart movie. Really good. Highly recommended.
All right, number 12.
Oh, yeah, if you have kids, you know this movie. WALL-E.
WALL-E, yeah.
WALL-E, yeah.
Number 13.
Awesome TV series. Futurama.
Futurama.
Come on, you gotta love Futurama. It took science fiction seriously. It really did. And I mean, it's underneath the hood. It is a loving homage to just about every science fiction novel, movie, and TV series you've ever heard of. So, yeah, way to go.
Number 14.
Mother, mother, oh mother, look at the darling baby on. His mother's dead. I'm going to keep him.
I have no friggin' idea.
This is the movie Fantastic Planet.
Oh, okay. Well,
baby
on my list.
Is a baby human.
I picked that up inferentially, but I had no idea where it was from.
All right. And number 15.
If you're my age, you probably saw this in a drive-in movie theater drunk with your friends.
Yeah.
This is Heavy Metal, based on the comic book Heavy Metal.
Yeah, and yeah. Like you said, heavy on the drug and alcohol use in this one. Yeah.
And very scantily clad women. Don't forget the scantily clad women.
I never do. Okay, number 16.
In the endless reaches of the universe, there once existed a planet known as... A planet that burned like a green star in the distant heavens. There, civilization was far advanced and had brought forth a race of supermen whose mental and physical powers were developed to the absolute peak of human perfection.
Oh, this is old school. This is early Superman. Really, this isn't the TV series. This has got to be before that. So this has to be a cartoon.
Cartoon Superman from 1941. That is a find. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Number 17. This is kind of interesting one.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go. Impossibles, Coil Man. The scene when things look mean. Impossibles.
Fluid Man.
Stays on the spot that's hot. Impossibles. Multiman. Makes like a crowd, no crooks allowed. Impossibles. Impossibles. Impossibles.
I have no idea. I don't know.
Frankenstein Jr. and the Impossibles.
Oh, okay.
Coil Man can turn limbs into coils. Fluid Man, I did not make this up. Fluid Man can turn into liquid.
Well,
and
really.
Multi-Man can make copies of himself.
You know who else can turn into liquid? Beer Man.
All right, number 18.
Ooh, Mr. Trouble never hangs around. When he hears this mighty sound, here I come to save the day.
Oh, this is what Andy Kaufman made a career out of this. Not a career, but this is Mighty Mouse.
This is Mighty Mouse. Here I come to save the day.
Yeah, I love that song. This is one of the great catchy cartoon heroic tunes of all time.
Number 19.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Oh, everybody saw this. Everybody enjoyed this as kids and had nightmares about this later. Thunderbirds.
I did not watch this. This was after my time.
And I believe they are go.
Yeah.
I believe Thunderbirds are go.
Thunderbirds are go. Okay.
But yeah, there were a couple of animated series that, once you realize what you're looking at, it's a little bit creepy. But Team America owes everything to the Thunderbirds.
All right. And number 20?
Headquarters. CMDF, Combined Miniature Defense Force.
Oh, I know this one. I can't think of the title of it, but I remember all of these characters, and I remember the music. I just remember what it was.
This one is Fantastic Voyage.
Oh, well, yeah.
The cartoon, the animated cartoon.
I feel bad not knowing that, because that one I actually knew. I just couldn't remember the title, but okay. Take one on me.
And last but not least, number 21.
We've got a brand new story about the castaways.
We left our tiny island after years and months and days.
We built a little spaceship. It's crude, but it could fly.
We left the home and lost our way between the stars and sky.
We went from an island to a star.
And Skipper, the millionaire, his wife.
The professor, the movie star, and Mary Ann began a brand new life.
What creatures we encounter. What riddles do we face?
What mysteries now haunt us in a strange, enchanting place?
Our adventures are the best by far.
Here on...
All right, like, this is what happens when my subconscious turns against me. Because, the only other Gilligan thing I know is Return to Gilligan's Island, but that's not this. So this has to be some kind of...
This is actually an animated series from 1982 called Gilligan's Planet.
Oh, geez.
They built a spaceship out of wood they found around the island. And
don't they always? Yeah.
Flew to outer space and greeted cute aliens. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Unbelievable. Hey,
thanks, Sid and Marty Croft.
Yeah, and you know, you can... I don't think it's a Sid and Marty Croft. It's just bad animation, but...
There were a lot of people with a lot of really weird ideas that should
And that one, I found out, is on YouTube. So you can go look on YouTube for Gilligan's Planet. And...
you can see both episodes.
Oh. It only lasted a year.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much. That was quick, but good one. And thank you very much to Magnolia ePublishing. I do believe we've got a couple in the can from Doc Faith Sherman. So we'll have more Science Fiction University coming up. Oh, Driftglass. I have one question for you.
Sure.
From a listener, Andrea. I don't know if this is the Andrea who was the Get in Line Blue Gal Andrea, though.
Oh, from before.
From way back.
Before times.
The before times. I should tell that story.
You should.
I should. First of all, Andrea sent me hand-spun yarn this week, which is gorgeous. And I will be making mittens out of it, I think, just soft and beautiful. And everyone who sends me yarn needs to know that once the yarn reaches my yarn stash, it has a gestation period of at least a year.
It does.
Before I will knit it. It has to sit, and I have to think about it, and especially if it's hand-spun. Just gorgeous. I have to be with the yarn for a while.
Like a skull. Michelangelo did that with slabs of marble.
Yeah.
You know, he would look
they
at them
and live
with them.
They had to talk to you. Right. The yarn has to talk to you and tell you what it wants to be. All right. And I've got
you're
a lot
artist.
Of yarn.
You are a true artist.
I'm an artist.
If you haven't seen Blue Gal's knitting, she is an artist.
Thank you. But Andrea sent me this gorgeous hand spun that she spun herself.
Wow.
But there was another person. I think it's another person, Andrea. Back in the day when you and I were just blogging and I was in Alabama, married to someone else and reading and loving your writing.
Before YouTube and
yeah, well, I don't know. It was before the podcast, before we had ever met.
Yeah.
Face to face. And here you had written this beautiful post. And as lots of people do when they comment, I had written in your blog, Drifty, will you marry me or not?
Uh-huh.
This was like in 2006, I think.
Yeah. Well, this is before blogging was dead. So, yeah. Yeah. So that's good.
Damn it, Drifty, will you marry me or not? And the next comment was from a commenter named Andrea who said, quote, get in line, Blue Gal.
Yeah.
And I looked at that and my eyebrows shot up. And I remember thinking to myself, does she know who I am?
And I remember thinking, ladies, please don't fight over little old me. If you're going to fight, let's get some t-shirts going and some jello on the floor. You know, we want to avoid any permanent damage. Yeah, it was quite a
cat fight over Driftglass. Yeah, no, I did not catfight her. I withdrew. No. But knowing that I was in a much better position.
Yeah.
To gather the affections of Driftglass than some non-blogger named Andrea.
You know,
no offense to the beautiful handspun,
no.
Andrea.
And you don't, I mean, Blue Gal doesn't punch down.
No.
You know what I mean? It's not funny. If it's not funny and it's not, this is why tall people such as myself can't win a fight.
Yeah.
In a bar.
Yeah.
You can't. You cannot win because the minute you take a swing at the person who's been needling you or pushing you or whatever, you lose because you're the big guy who picked on the little guy. So you just, in this life, in Blue Gal, if I may quote Mike Ditka, for no reason particularly other than he liked to say, you know, in life, punching down is nobody's a winner.
Nobody's a winner. No.
Nobody's a winner.
No. But I did spend many a moon making Eat Your Heart Out, Andrea. tagline in my blogging. So.
Yes. Well, and you were quite a consistent. You're still a blogger, but you were quite a consistent blogger back in the day.
Oh,
and you had
yeah.
a you were running a salon.
Yep.
Back when that was a thing that people would do.
I had a video blog.
Yeah.
I had a weekly video blog, and then I did some audio, and I was always playing with stuff. And sometimes I kind of miss that daily blogging, but I just don't have time for it right now.
Yeah.
So.
Twitter killed it. Twitter killed it all.
At any rate, I'm very glad to be married to you.
Me too.
Yeah.
Boy, am I. Yeah. It's smartest thing I ever did. Sure.
And,
I didn't get Gilligan's Planet, but I married you. So, you know.
Did. There you go. Andrea sent a question. That was my point.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Andrea of the Handspun sent a Science Fiction University question for you.
A quiz?
Mm-hmm. Just a quick one. According to Spider Robinson, what household object is another name for God?
Oh, okay.
Household appliance is another name for God.
Oh, this is, he's got a story called this.
Oh.
God is an iron.
God is an iron.
Because if you commit burglary, you're a burglar.
You're a burglar, that's right.
So if you commit irony, you're an iron. And God is the entity that commits irony. And there's something like, and I'm the scorch on the ass of the pants that he's ironing. And I believe that's the follow-through line. But yeah, that was a I love Spider Robinson. I know he's still around. I believe he still writes every now and then. I know he's had like his wife who he adored more than any person in the world passed away. I think his daughter got ill. I'm not sure what happened. I'm not sure what her status is, but he has been through the ringer and back many times, and he does not write nearly as much as he used to. I think the place where he lives in Canada has essentially found him a sinecure at a library. Because he's that sweet older guy who's everybody loves and who's a good writer. And I think he's sort of in his declining years. Mm-hmm. I hope not, but I think that's the case. And I love Spider Robinson. I read everything I could lay my hands on by Spider Robinson because he wrote like a demon. He was really good. He was funny and smart. And there was a certain Heinlein-ish quality to it in that it was very well engineered writing, but it was always humane and it was always uplifting and it was always hopeful about the future. And I really adored that writing. And so he stuck with me over the years. And I hope he's out there and I hope he's doing well.
All right. And thank you very much, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Bye.